When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, Paisani, and welcome back. I'm John Viola, along with my partner in crime, the notorious P.O.B. This is the Italian-American Podcast, and we are coming to you moments after a 4.7 earthquake shook the state of New Jersey. The city of New York.
And now all of a sudden it became the New Jersey earthquake.
Isn't that funny? Epicentered here.
If it's a football team, it's yours. So it's the New York Giants, New York Jets, and New Jersey earthquakes.
That's so true. Yeah, it is the New Jersey.
They throw us under the bus. It's that 718 prejudice.
It is a little bit, isn't it? But we're debating continuing the recording today, so God willing, you'll hear this air at some point.
If you don't, that means we didn't make it.
Find this.
I don't think they could go through the rubble.
No.
Don't worry about saving people. You got to get that recording.
The lost episode of the Italian American Podcast. How
they need Italian search dogs that could smell us? I think he smell like a soprassata.
You got your cookies here.
We're going to find him, yay.
It'll be your Easter cookies. If you give it away. What do you got here, by the way? You got Easter cookies, bro.
I am in a quest.
Yeah.
Because you know I'm a sick person, need a lot of help.
Yeah.
I went from the gastronomic puttana. That was my old name that Mike Giordano gave me. And I am a gastronomic puttana. I could play both ways. But I'm also a gastronomic archaeologist.
Yeah, you are.
So with Easter food, I love to experiment because I want to know what did this taste like in 1700.
Right.
1800. So those little cookies that, well, they what happened is they morphed into the ricotta cookie. So you had what was called an anginetti, that was the Italian knot cookie.
Yeah.
Right? So the knot cookie is a little dry.
Yes.
Right? Because Italian cookies are a little dry. So, because we're a dunking culture.
Yeah.
So that's the grandchild. The anginetti is the grandchild. The great-grandchild is the ricotta cookie. Right?
So I see these ricotta cookies. I know Rome makes a whole thing of them, right? That's like a big recipe for her. I don't know if I've ever had these ricotta cookies. I know anginetti, and those are what I grew up eating. They're drier, they're crumblier, they're harder. But I don't know if I've ever had them with the ricotta in them.
The ricotta makes them soft.
Yeah.
So my thing is, if you make, I don't know what they call them, lemon drops. Or,
yeah, lemon drops, right? Yeah.
Now, why they become lemon drops is because Americans don't like anise.
Right.
So people canned anise, and it became lemon. The lemon in those cookies were always associated in Italy. It was lemon and anise. So there is a historical, that's just not an Americanization. Yeah. But your lemon drop cookie, whatever you want to call that cookie, its child, which is the great-grandchild of the original, is the ricotta cookie. The parent, from my research, is the giant egg taral that is popular in Puglia and Calabria. So they're called taral di Pasqua, called a lot of genetti, different names. But what happened was, so this is all before the war, right? And we're going to go back to the 18th century. So in the 1700s, if you don't use yeast as a leavening agent, your only leavening agent is beating up eggs, aerating the eggs, adding the aerated eggs to flour, sugar, or your combo, and then baking it. Now, the problem is those ovens were like 800-degree ovens because they were bread ovens.
Right.
So you had to make a sweet that could handle that kind of heat. That's why we're fried. That's where the zeppolas come from, or pizza fritta, wherever you're from. Because it's easier to control oil over an open fire, temperature-wise, than it is a wood oven, right?
Yeah.
A wood bread oven. So those egg tarals were put into at the end of the baking, so you made all your bread. Then as the heat was going down, you put these big egg tarals into the oven, and it's still like 500 degrees. That blast of heat with all the eggs, because they're very eggy, those tarals, that made them explode and
rise,
expand,
like a souffle, yeah.
Expand, exactly.
Yeah.
So they were big in Irpinia. So all through the south of Italy, they existed. So then what happens is ammoniaca, which is baker's ammonia, comes onto the scene, which was hartshorn is what it's called in the English-speaking world, which was ground D deer antler. So the first rising agent that wasn't beaten egg or that wasn't yeast was ground deer antler.
I'd love to know who discovered that.
The Nordic people sold that to us.
That's wild.
Well, they sold us baklava and deer antler.
Not bad. That's not bad.
So that was added to stuff. Now, that is baking ammonia is the bomb. I mean,
really?
If you're going to, yes, absolutely. That's why biscotti, whatever you want to call them. My grandma said biscotti, right? That's why they're crispy. That's why they were always crispy. Because baker's ammonia, you can't have it in anything that's too wet. You can't put it in a cake. If you're making hard cookies, it makes them crisp, and it makes them expand.
That's so interesting.
But they stink in the oven. They
Like ammonia.
Oh, you know, baking ammonia is the same thing that they use smelling salts with. It's the same thing.
Really?
So baking ammonia, it stinks the first day, and after a day or two, it dissipates.
You're talking about the cookies come out stinking the first day?
Yes. That's why they would have to aerate.
Wow.
Now, there is one Italian brand. I'm not going to give anybody any freebies anymore.
Amen.
If you want to personally message me, I might tell you. Right?
Now you're talking my language.
There's an Italian, because I'm getting disgusted. They don't even give us a cup of coffee.
Exactly.
There's one Italian baking ammonia that does not smell anymore. Mm. But the rest of them stink to high heaven. But if you could just put it in another room for a day or two, I don't think it's that bad. If you have a really good sense of smell, if smells get you.
Yeah.
So they're going to smell in the oven. They're going to smell when they come out of the oven. But that was what we used in the 1700s up until really the war era. Right. Mm. And it's back in fashion. Everybody, people in Italy still use it. And it's starting to come back in fashion here. The Greeks use it as well. So we added baking ammonia to those big eggy dolls. And then, you know, like when the monkey turns into the man, you have all those little skulls that go in between.
Yeah.
Then we start to get a cookie that's no longer the big egg doll that becomes the small tadal that's frosted. Now, you could frost it with sugar, powdered sugar and water, but really, the real ancient one was egg white, beaten egg white and powdered sugar. So the next step, so the great-granddaddy is the big egg tadal. That's only leavened by eggs. And then the next one becomes the small tadal cookie, which morphs into the not cookie, which has anise added to it, because anise flavor is the defining flavor of southern Italy. At this point, it has baking ammonia, and now it shrinks from the huge, big tadal, egg tadal, down to the small tadal-like cookie. Now, another reason why you make it smaller is the smaller the cookie, the quicker the ammonia dissipates. Mm. It escapes more. Ammonia doesn't like a dense cookie because it can't get out. You want that ammonia smell to get out. So what happened from there is baking soda, like the 1840s, starts to take off. Now, when baking soda takes off, baking soda needs an acid to be triggered. That's why Irish soda bread uses baking soda, because Irish flour and Irish temperature do not do well with yeast. Mm. The wheat that's grown in Ireland needs baking soda. That's why in Ireland they use buttermilk, which is acidic, to make a soda bread grow. Mm. So then you'd need lemon. You would need an acidifier for your baking soda to work in the south of Italy to make that same cookie blow up. Then I guess around the 1920s, baking powder is baking soda with an acid added, like a citric acid added. Yeah. So the trigger's already in there. So what does that spur after the war is the pan degli angeli. That's baking powder. That's all that is, right? With a little bit of powdered vanilla as the flavoring agent. But the problem, what really allows these cookies to take off, is a gas oven that you can monitor. You can say it's going to be 350 and it's not going to
stay
change.
Like that for the rest
right.
of the day.
And so you go from the big egg tadal, to the which is just egg as the leavener, to the small tadal that has the frosting on it and that's tiny because you have to get the baking ammonia out. That's baking ammonia. Then you have the lemon drop cookie. That's baking powder and a little bit of lemon. And then you have the ricotta cookie.
Now, what are these that you made?
I am trying to. The biggest weakness I see in American pastry gastronomics is the fact that we don't. See, people go double zero flour, single zero flour. That's not the defining thing. The defining is the protein content. So to make your cookies crispy, you need a high protein content.
What's protein in a cookie?
It's the protein of the flour.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's super important. You want a high protein flour for bread. I go on forever, so I talked to Mary Grace, the baking expert. So I tried to make, I would say, daddy tadal. Not grandpa tadal, not grandchild tadal. Not great-grandchild at all. I try to make
the second generation.
Second generation with pastry flour, and they come out soft, even with the baker's ammonia. So I have to go to have a flour that I'm looking at, that would be about 12 and change. So this flour is 8.5 protein. They're good. I mean, you understand something? Good is never good enough for me.
No, you're
obsessed. That is a completely unacceptable. Excellence is the goal of my life, right? So this is 8.5. I'm not going to go to all-purpose because all-purpose goes between 10.5 and maybe 12 all-purpose. I'm going to go to a really high protein. I am convinced that a high protein, I've done it before with a high protein flour, and they come out crispy.
Okay. So we're going to have your attempt. And what are the other cookies you made?
Oh, that is a Dolores hijacked recipe.
You stole Dolores' recipe?
No, she gave it to me. I'm going to publicize it like if it was her social security number because I haven't gotten the duck. So this is called the hostage.
The hostage cookie.
This is the hostage cookie.
They look
cookie.
Good. They look like professional
So she sent
cookies.
It to me. I had extra egg whites, and I made them. And she's given, this is a 30-day warning, that if I don't get the duck recipe, I don't even get the duck. I haven't even seen the duck. That the cookie recipe is going public. Because you know she's the one that would limit the cookie recipe.
Oh, she does not want her recipes
no.
out
well,
there.
Well, you
no,
know
no,
what,
no.
Dolores? You should have thought twice about that one. I got the hostage with the kill switch.
You know, I messed up my recipes this year. I had a disaster of Easter pie making.
Oh, everything went wrong. We got horns on us this
Something's
year.
Something's not right, yeah.
Yeah, there's a full-time somebody zapping us.
Yes, I've been trying. I got to go get the T6 taken.
Bravo. Our guest today is spitting and doing the horns. Good job.
Yeah, well, you got to know what you're talking about here.
You know
but
what?
Yeah,
I screwed up big
one.
Time. All my breads and my gazza deal because I overproofed my yeast.
Yeah, I had a horrible. I too little sugar in my pastiera, too much egg in my meat pies. It was just not.
I'm doing a book on this. I've decided that.
You should.
That was my come to Jesus moment, so I'm doing a book on that.
You're always picking people's brains, and the thing I've noticed is, like, no two families make Easter pie the same way. No two families. I really believe that. Even, like, I was with Sabino and Michaela from Grown Up Italian the other night, talking about Easter pies. Their family makes them different than my family did. They come from next door in the same town.
There's an evolution.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'll tell you something. Another theory that I have is that the Val di Diano did not make grain pies. That's another post-war thing.
Well, let's bring our guests into the
Can I just say one
this.
Last thing?
Yeah.
And this is like, Pat, and you could just bury me after this. I'll shut up. What people don't realize is that outside of big cities like Salerno and Naples, pastry shops did not exist before the war. Again, because you needed a gas stove to control things. When the boom happened, when Italy had this big population boom after the war, a lot of guys who had been Neapolitan-trained bakers moved into the hinterland. They moved into Calabria and Basilicata, and they went into towns that were experiencing economic growth, right, the boom, and they opened up Neapolitan pastry shops. So the grain, Bastida di Grana, going into the outer reaches of Campania, a lot of that has to do with the post-war migration. I would bet money, I know this is the case in Tijano, if you were in the Val di Diano in Salerno before the war, you had a ricotta cheesecake. If you had something for Easter, it was not with grain in it.
Now, I got one great uncle left, my Uncle Dominic. You know him. He's like 92. Yeah. I should ask him what my great grandmother, because my grandmother was born here after they got here, and her recipe is a grain pie. That's what I inherited. That's what I've known my whole life. She did make a rice pie, but we also had a grain pie. So I don't know.
Said this before, and I promise I'm going to shut up, John. I'll be a good boy all day.
Yeah.
And the rice pie is in the Cilento because Pastum had rice pie.
Why don't you introduce our guest who's here to talk about a whole different topic, but. Of course, before we got on the mic, we were talking about her family's rice pie. So why don't you introduce her?
Yes, that's what triggered all this. Marissa's here. Marissa's father's family's from Magnone, and they make a rice pie like my grandfather's side does. And so we had a rice pie conversation, and that's what triggered me to go off. Not that it takes a lot to trigger me to go off on a tangent.
No, not on pie, especially in the weeks after
she
Easter.
Had to call her sister up on vacation.
Marissa, welcome to the Italian American Podcast.
Thank you so much. I feel honored to be here.
And you've listened before, I heard.
I have.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. We appreciate that. So you know that going off on a 40-minute tangent on pie or cookies is not unusual.
Yeah. No. I was happy to take that journey with you.
Thank you. That was a journey. But then again, that's what makes us the NPR of Italian America.
Exactly. That's what we're here for. It's a service.
That's like the fresh air. Aria fresca. That's what we should recall the show.
Sure. You know, I was thinking about that during Easter because my Sicilian grandfather grew up in a part of Brooklyn that was all Sicilian, Knickerbocker Avenue. And every year I make an effort to get stuff from a certain pastry shop. If you know, because it's the only Sicilian business left and what was like a huge Sicilian enclave. But they are the only ones who make like four or five traditional pastries and the Easter cookie with the egg in it and stuff. And I always get them for my grandfather and for the rest of my family because they're great. But I was thinking about that as I was doing it and getting these. And I was thinking about our guest from New Haven bringing a chocolate lemon pie. It's like an indigenous New Haven Italian thing. And I said, you almost need like a map of where you can still get stuff. Because when we would go to court Street pastry shop in Brooklyn, and they had like the breakfast cookies, right? And most of these bakeries don't make all of those anymore, but they still do.
I love Court Street Bakery. I'll give them throw them out a plug here.
Yeah, we were in the video.
I love Court Street.
I don't think we ever released that.
It reminds me of Jersey City so much. It's so much it's like what the bakeries in Jersey City made. It's the same.
Yeah. It was the same community.
Only, yeah, because Red Hook, that area of Brooklyn, the name keeps changing.
South Brooklyn.
South Red Brooklyn, Hook. But it had Ferry's Jersey. Yeah. But I'm going to shut up because then poor Marissa ain't going to get two words in.
So introduce Marissa.
I'm going to go on my phone now. Bye, guys. Have fun.
Minus the pastries. Tell the world why Marissa's here.
The one thing that John and I are very much committed to is we don't want to die with us. Now, that sounds very negative, right? But even though we're in midlife, you got to plant your seeds, right? Olive trees, you grow for the next generation. Right. You know what's the saying? Because it takes so many years for them to mature. And if we're going to pass this on now, where we're going to be multiple generations removed from the motherland, educating youth is the number one priority that we have. That's why we're so far behind IAFL. That was the backing behind IAFL. But education has to take on different facets, right? So Marissa's an Italian educator, teaches Italian language in the high school level.
Yes, and middle school.
And she brings young people to Italy on tours of Italy. And I think that is so important because high school is such an important age.
Yeah.
And if you're going to teach the language, it's so important for the kids to actually see the language in action the mother country.
I had lunch yesterday with a couple of prominent Italian Americans, the consul general from New York and undersecretary of foreign affairs. We were just talking about, you know, issues that come up. And of course, language came up. And I don't know if it got lost in the translation. We were all speaking English. I was trying to say to the minister, the underminister, whatever the Italian title translates to, there's so much about the Italian mindset and view of the world that requires at least a rudimentary knowledge of Italian. And I always go back to the concepts like figura and somebody being, you know, furbo or feso. And, you know, like, these are concepts that you don't have a direct translation, but the language, any language, can convey in one word something that you'll struggle to say in a sentence or a paragraph. And I think that that's so important, particularly in Italian. So for you, obviously this is your culture. You're passionate about it. What's your student population like? What kind of kids are you teaching? And why are they coming for Italian classes?
So I've taught in a couple of different districts in northern New Jersey. Obviously, there's a lot of heritage speakers. Not so much in the, you know, up and coming generation, like Gen Y, Gen Alpha. Those are kids that their grandparents maybe spoke Italian and maybe their grandparents were speaking some sort of a dialect. So a lot of the student population are, you know, descendants of origins from Italy. And then there's some districts in our area that aren't, or maybe they used to be historically, you know, very prominent Italian communities, but maybe they're changing demographically. And maybe there's a lot of native Spanish speakers who are taking Italian, so which I think is really a strength as well for the programs, because you get, you know, a little bit of a mix of both of those things. But right now where I am, it's a prominent Italian American community, and it's a really thriving program where I'm teaching.
So you've got a good dose of Italian kids sprinkled in these classes, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for business.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But, you know, we had this conversation yesterday. Like, we can't assume that the Italian-American community is going to be the only ones to take Italian. It's not an international language of business. We know that. Obviously, the arts and stuff, it's great. But it's a great romance language, and you can go in a lot of different directions with other languages from there. But for the nation's burgeoning Hispanic community, many of whom are first language Spanish speakers or, you know, the children of, it's a great second language to take, right? It's such an easy kind of jump into. And, you know, frankly, that's not a horrible thing when you're trying to keep your GPA and all these things. Like, you know, it's good to have something that's not, you know, I'm going from speaking Spanish to Mandarin. You know what I mean? It's a nice thing. So there's an appeal there, I hope. And that's something that the Italian authorities are trying to kind of express, because, you know, if people aren't convinced to take it for whatever reasons, the schools start pulling these programs, right?
Right.
You see it all over the place.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think even our community, there's, you know, people are straying away from it in certain areas and certain places because it's not quote unquote useful or practical language. But I think it's really misguided because you don't know when something's, you know, an opportunity is going to be open to you and what that opportunity could even be. So you should study Italian because you love it. You should study it because it's a beautiful language. It's a beautiful culture. It can open doors for you that you don't even know exist. And, you know, saying, and obviously Spanish is also a very beautiful language, and, you know, it's the default world language that's studied across the United States for a good reason. But that's not to say that it will be more quote unquote useful to you, because you just don't know.
It's such an interesting, I was reading a book the other day about the American overseas territories, really kind of interesting look in the areas that we control as a nation, but they don't have, you know, full sovereignty, Puerto Rico, Guam, what used to be the Philippines, stuff like that. And anyway, the author goes on at the end to kind of talk about America's dominance and cultural empire after the war, and he talks about the dominance of the English language spreading throughout the world. And it's, I think it's the third most frequent mother tongue, but it's the first most studied second tongue. And what he was going through was some of the statistics saying, like, Americans now, particularly, after multiple generations of the world is starting to bend to your needs for, as in terms of English, Americans are just taking much less foreign language, right? And so that's almost benefits the Italian to say, like, look, if the whole world's speaking English and the trend is you don't need to take foreign language for the utility of it, right? It's not a strategic decision, then do it for something that's beautiful and something that's interesting. And that's the beauty of Italy. Like one of our guests said, we are a cultural superpower, right? And all that stuff comes along with the language, you know?
Right. Agreed.
So you take these kids, you take the high school kids?
I have taken several groups to Italy in the past. And really, it kind of was born out of just a dream I had when I started teaching Italian, which would, you know, was like, this is the ultimate goal, right? It's like the living classroom, taking students there and seeing it. I've, you know, been there so many times myself. I've toured around. I lived in Rome for a while. So, you know, you, not that you ever get bored of it, because there's just so much to learn and to know. But when you're taking students there and you see it through their eyes, it's like a whole different experience. So I started taking groups 10 years ago or so, over 10 years ago. And I just loved it. And I started doing it every year. And then when COVID hit, that obviously didn't happen for a couple years. And since then, I've, you know, I have a son, he's a young son. So I don't travel anymore. But I've started working with the agency that I traveled with. They're an Italian based agency called Super Ciao Tour. And I sort of have been, you know, promoting for them and consulting with various school groups, mostly in the tri-state area, but across the country, to bring students. So I don't travel myself anymore, but I help other schools kind of organize their own trips and send other groups.
That's great. I mean, what so much better to be spreading the, you know, the effect than, right, one trip where you are. And yeah, I mean, to me, you know, when I was at NIAF, we, long before me and even more so since, they have the Voyage Discovery for college students. And I, you know, I get to see them once a year, and we'd go for our board meeting. We'd have like a dinner with them, and the impact that it was having on their lives is infectious. So I could only imagine with high school students. These were students that were in your classes that you'd had all year. So you knew these kids.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
kind
of nice.
They're usually I mean, you can take any level, I guess. There's some schools, very brave teachers take middle schoolers.
I don't know if I can.
No, thank you. most of them.
Terrible.
I know. Most of them, although they're probably a little bit more, I don't know, well behaved, or like maybe a little bit more scared to take risks.
That's true.
So
yeah, that's a good point.
It's a different, you know, it's a different side of the coin. But most of the time they're upperclassmen, juniors, seniors, sometimes sophomores, whatever, that end up going, because they're, you know, those are the kids that are continuing on in the language and they're taking the upper levels. They're taking, you know, AP, and those are usually the population of students that are going. Yeah.
So they're a little bit more capable in it already.
They're more capable. They're more invested in it. The beauty of it too is like a lot of times they go on this trip, and now maybe some of them have even been to Italy before. Maybe some of them, like, you know, they're heritage speakers, so they have family there or whatever. When they're going with their classmates and they're going with their teacher and they're putting it, you know, in the context, everything that they've learned in the classroom, they're putting it into that real life context. It's life changing, really. Yeah. And a lot of times they do it, and then they, you know, they'll go on and they'll study Italian in college. They'll study abroad. Like, you know, they get a little taste of it, and then it's enough to kind of propel them into, you know, studying and continuing on with it.
And there's something about traveling with contemporaries, with friends, right, with these kind of programs. I don't know if it's the independent, like I remember as a high schooler, I had got, you know, been going back and forth to Italy for a long time. I don't think any of my friends in my public high school in Chatham had ever gone. And I had this like vision my whole senior year that we were going to go together. We never did. And, you know, that was that. But I remember back to that kind of like, can't wait to share this with people, the enthusiasm. And now, you know, we do it all the time. We're there, although we haven't been back since COVID together, but we'll get there soon. And, you know, all the people that we get to travel with and share these kind of things, you know, they go back, they send the next person, they bring people. It's a movement, right? Yeah. And it sounds like if you're offering your services to other schools, that's something that you've kind of seen into actuality. What's the chances we can make this an even more a contagious movement? You know, how do we get more schools to offer these kind of things? Is it funding? Is it organization? What?
That's the million-dollar question. I think ultimately we need the programs to grow. We need the programs to spread. And how does that happen? That happens from, you know, the roots up, the ground up. And really, you need, if you are in a place where your school district offers Italian, you need to take that language. You don't be, you know, I guess that like that back to the conversation about being, you know, taking the default language because you think it's going to be more useful. Take Italian because you love it and you want to take it. And
don't waste your vote.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
You vote with your feet.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. It's in your own best interest to do it. So that's one. Two, if you are in a district that doesn't have Italian, you need to advocate for it. The voices of the students and the families are going to be what makes the difference. You know, like go to the board meetings. And it does happen. And it is happening where, you know, they're popping up. Programs are kind of popping up all over. I think that's definitely step one. If you are thinking about studying Italian in, you know, higher education, and better yet, if you're thinking about doing education, that is a huge need, because right now we're in this weird flux period where a lot of people are leaving education in general. People are retiring and there's not enough people to fill those positions. So especially in the world languages, not just in Italian, in general, because there's just fewer people that are studying languages in general in college, let alone then for education, teach them. So if you're even considering that as a possibility, get the requirements done in college. Think about it, because the job market is there. It doesn't, you know, again, you might not know it, but I'm telling you, there are definitely positions around open, and that's the other thing. And then I would say the other piece is, if you are currently, like me, a teacher of Italian, let's just say for now, you need to be adaptable. I think the world is changing. Education is changing. The way people learn and think is changing. We have AI. We have, you know, almost every school is a one-to-one district where everybody has a Chromebook or something like that in front of their face. They have access to all the information they could possibly need. They can translate something in 10 seconds. You can scan your phone over a text and it'll translate into another language. Yeah. So what are we doing? We shouldn't be only thinking about, you know, the grammar and verb conjugations and translate this text. We need to really adapt to the modern times and think about the two major things, which are communicating and the culture, and thinking critically about the culture. So that's something. And just constantly, you know, growing, getting involved in professional development, getting involved in taking courses, you know, getting involved in the community, growing our programs by making them love it, just making it fun. I mean, I'm not teaching rocket science here. I'm teaching Italian. What better thing? Like, how lucky am I that I get to talk about this stuff all day long?
Yeah, it's true.
And do this. I'm the luckiest person in the world. And we need to transmit that to our students too. Because if we love it and if we make it fun, then they're going to want to be there more.
Are you part of, what's the association of teachers? There's two of them.
Right?
One's college, one's high school.
Well, there's the American Association of Teachers of Italian, which is national.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and they're the ones that do the Italian Honor Society. They do lots of different things. There's different chapters, local chapters. I'm also part of the Italian Teachers Association of New Jersey. So I'm on the executive board for that. Yeah,
wow.
So I'm really involved in that. We do a lot of professional development. Both organizations do a lot of professional development opportunities, grants for teachers, grants for students. So, you know, you should join those organizations because you don't. There's so many opportunities there, not only for you professionally, but also for your students. So it's really important to get involved in that.
Do you guys have an annual gathering?
We do. So Itanje has different events. We do the Primo Encontro, which is in the beginning of the year. It's more professional development based. We do it in person at Rutgers University. And then in the spring, we just actually finished doing our student showcase workshop. It's called Italian Language and Culture Day. I was the co-chair person. It takes a lot of organization.
I went to that 30 plus years ago.
Did you?
Did you really?
Did you participate?
It was different then.
It was different then. It was like not even, they used to hold it, I think, in like a restaurant or something, right? It was more like a banquet. And
yes, I went in 1992.
Wow.
I have only, can I be me a minute?
Yeah.
I have a 13 year of my grammar school, kindergarten, and high school records are impeccable. Except my algebra teacher gave me an insufficient because I missed a test because my Italian class, my Italian club in high school, went to Italian Culture Day.
Wow.
So the only mark on my record was for my own people. That was the hit I took. And she was part Italian. I never have let that go.
I wouldn't either.
30-some years later, it aggravates me.
Everybody needs a
vacation. And she's like, well, I didn't know about this. She gave me such a hard time over it. We had a lot of fun. But that's why I think that my high school had such a strong Italian program.
I've known you all these years, and we've worked together every week. Did you take Italian?
Yes, I took Italian, Spanish, and I took Latin one summer.
How long did you take Italian?
2 years. But I took Spanish first, and then I took Italian.
Was it offered in grade school at Queen of Peace?
No, high school. We had an extremely strong Italian. I don't think anyone had a stronger Italian program than we did.
So you've had two semesters of Italian.
Well, I had 2 years of Italian.
Two years, excuse me.
I think we offered a third year.
Yeah.
We had the Italian club in high school was so strong that I think it was very formative for me and for everyone else involved. And that's why I wanted Marissa on today, because I think that we have to realize that we have to plant the seeds early. So mom and dad can't take Junior to Italy to see the heritage of humanity, right? Not just the heritage of Italy, UNESCO, right? UNESCO basically is Italy, you know? So we need to get, for parents who can't afford it, we got to find money for these kids. Mm-hmm. And for parents who can't afford it, we have to sell them on the fact that this is worth more to you than anything, because I think that I went twice to Italy with my high school class. In 1991 and 1992, and it was just, number one, it was great to see the Italy of the Gettone.
I was going to say, imagine 1991. I mean, I was a kid, the Gettone days, but you're talking about before Mani Puliti. You're talking about the First Republic.
Yeah, sure.
You caught the tail end of...
I caught the tail end. I remember we had a faculty member who was from Caposele in Avellino, and we went there. And to see Avellino in the early, that's 1991, it was a million miles away. It was a totally different. If you go to Italy now, because we're in the information super technology age, there really is no difference. I mean, there's a little difference. There's no difference.
You know,
when 1991, it was a different planet.
Yeah.
And I think that it was so important because if you go on a family trip, you might see Rome if you land in the airport, but you're going to wind up in a small, which is important. You're going to wind up in your small town and you're not going to see anything. But when you go to school, it's a class, right? So everything I saw in Italy that has historic value in the sense of like Florence and Venice and the Uffizi, I saw through school. And I think that is so, I can't highlight it enough. It is so important because the font of Italy is all the humanities benefit.
Yeah.
So your history class, your literature, I mean, everything benefits from taking young kids to Italy. And I think it's so important because if we plant those seeds in high school, they're going to really grow in college because that's going to encourage those kids to take humanities classes in college, because we're in a world now that pushes science and technology, right? So everything else that's not, I mean, there's a lot of big movers and shakers who think if it's not science and technology, it's a waste.
Yeah.
So who cares, you know, with AI can create a David better than a sculptor can.
Bad
right?
news is AI can also code probably it with very quickly, very soon we'll be able to code as well, if not better than a coder. So those jobs are going to disappear right. too. So give humanity a chance.
And I think the science and technology world is like, well, what do you need a Sistine Chapel for?
Yeah.
And I think the way we fight that, the dehumanization of society, is by installing in, and I think France does a better job, France in an ideological form.
Mm-hmm.
Italy's having lunch all the time, yeah. right? But France is saying, like, listen, this stuff is important. Yeah. Like that, why, and, you know, you, not you, but in a jocular sense, make fun of the fact that I'm obsessed with fountain pens.
Yeah.
And I've said it, France makes their grammar school kids write with fountain pens because the French mentality is script is beautiful and you have to learn how to write beautifully.
Amazing.
So, like, texting is more efficient.
Yeah.
But script is beautiful. So, we're going to have you write with a really beautiful pen that writes beautifully to teach you about beauty. And I think that taking your kids to Italy to see, I mean, think about this. The Trevi Fountain was basically a public fountain.
Yeah.
Right? That's where people used to wash their Mutande. Right? I mean, in Italy, you wash your underwear. I mean, you know, true. We have beautiful fountains to wash yeah. underwear in. Yeah. You know, that was. And the fact that our aqueducts, everything we did was beautiful. We never did anything that was ugly. Everything we did was the most minimal thing still had beauty. That's Italy's nuclear weapon, mm-hmm. right? If we're the world's lifestyle superpower, our dedication to beauty is the nuke that made us the world's superpower in that sense.
Yeah, so true.
And we have to ingrain and radicalize. That's my whole thing is IFL. We want to radicalize Italian Americans. Because if we radicalize children, because we radicalize kids in good things.
Yeah.
Beauty and literature and good food and peaceful.
I mean, yeah. And belonging and history.
You know,
and
Italy's not a conquering country because the few times we tried it, we failed miserably.
That's true.
Right? And we have to plant these seeds early on because the general culture now is saying things like, who cares about beauty? Who cares yeah. about history? Who cares about humanities? And that's why Marissa's here. We got to invest money. Parents got to invest money in sending their kids to Italy to learn what it means to be human.
What are the reactions you get from these kids?
I mean, just always positive. Always yeah. positive. I mean, even right now I have a couple of groups because it's spring break. So I have a few groups that are there that I'm following. And I'm getting messages and videos and, you know, the kids singing on the bus. It's just joyful and... We also try to organize for them an experience where they go to an Italian school and they do a tour of the Italian school and they meet with the students there, which I always think, I mean, I've heard from past students that have done these trips and they make connections with people. They stay in touch. They, you know, follow each other on social media. They WhatsApp each other. I had the very first trip I ever did, I had a student who we went to a school in Florence and then, you know, a few years later, I guess she was a senior. So a couple years later, she studied abroad in Florence and she... you know, met up with these kids that she met in the Italian high that's school a great. Couple years before. And they, you know, they hung out. It was really, it's like, that's the point. You're connecting with people. And to your point, like what makes us human is that, and that's what we should be focusing on.
I always say that. I've been saying that for a long time. Like the technology, unfortunately, same technology that's going to bring this episode out to millions of people is the same technology in our pocket that just dehumanizes us constantly and pulls us away from each other. And if there's anything Italians, you know, we talk about shared values and what bonds us. And there's 8 million, you always say, no two Italians can agree on a meatball recipe.
That's like, Floyd Vivino. I mean, I stole that from Floyd Vivino.
Oh, you did?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, that was not original.
All credit to the Will Rogers of Italian America.
Floyd Vivino said, how can you unite a country that can't even agree on a meatball recipe?
But the point being, we are not particularly united by... right, a monolithic culture. It's not like that, right? Everything is very unique.
I mean, you travel around Poland, everybody speaks Polish.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a little accent here, but, you know, Gural is a little bit accent there. But Italy, I mean, village to village.
Yeah.
They will swear, well, we say this word that way.
Or, exactly.
You know, they add pepper to their recipe, and we don't, and that makes it a completely different recipe. And
same thing happens here in these, you know, we IFL, great example. You meet Italians that from Mississippi who've been there 100 years, or our friends from Arkansas or California or Chicago. Everybody's different, right? But the point is, I always think the thing that does tie us together, the sinew that goes through every Italian from that peninsula through time is... what we are good at is the stuff that makes us human, right? Just simple food, simple joy in togetherness, in conversation that some doesn't have to have a point. that you could sit in a piazza all day and play the same card game and have pretty much the same conversation and be satisfied with it. The pace of life that the Italian mind brings, like you say, the attention to detail of fine things. That's what I love about Italy. Like every little item you buy in the store is wrapped nice. Like the best
example I think of Italy is Marinella, the Thai shop in Naples.
Yeah.
Because in Marinella, they custom make your tie. So you go in and they take your neck size and your suit size and they make the tie that is perfect for you, right? An off-the-rack tie is cheaper, right? And really, when you see what people would term Metagon people, right? Golf shirt, polo shirt, khaki America. It's a national uniform, mm-hmm. right? You go anywhere outside of some major metropolitan areas like New York. It's a khaki pants and Iron? The sportswear company. Ironclad, whatever it's called.
I see like the sleeveless vests a lot.
And what I'm just trying to say is that America, there's like, that's like good enough, right? Mm-hmm. In Italy, it's never good enough, right? So the worst things about Italy is stuff they adopted from us. They took none of our good things.
No, that's true.
Like efficiency.
Democracy.
Meritocracy.
Meritocracy.
They took like, let's look sloppy. Right? But if you go to Marinella, you walk in and there's a cranky lady sometimes who goes and takes your measurements and says, this tie is the perfect tie for your body and your complexion. And this tie, fatta apposta, right? It's made it's just for you.
Yeah.
That to me is the epitome of Italy.
Yeah, because they have a few nice things that they take care of. I mean, my whole point is like, we are a culture that's really good at being human, the stuff that counts, right? Family, food, togetherness, the peace of mind in the simple stuff. And that's like your point, Marissa. You know, it's not so much about, well, when am I going to use this language and what's it going to be on my resume? Sometimes it's about the transmission of those values in that culture. And I think it's a lot easier to recognize the strengths of the Italian character and the Italian social character if you understand the language, right?
Just to jump on into, if you asked me the Italy of the early 90s, people showered much less.
Yes.
But dressed much better.
That's very true.
Right? And Italians always looked good. Yeah. Right? And I think that the post-Kurt Cobain grunge, because that was really the first volley over the sun, mm-hmm. right, was the grunge look, right? That's become a full American mindset. So why do you care how you look? Because nothing really matters, mm-hmm. right? So we're in a math, and I'm not trying to downplay math and technology, but we're in a math and technology world where that's the most important thing. And I think that it's become a battle for civilization in the sense of culture to non-culture.
Yeah.
So to emptiness. And the fact that is, if you take the Kurt Cobain worldview as a political view and say, this is my counter, so I'm dressing this way as a countercultural message, that's different than saying it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So we're in a world now, because I see it in the classroom that we have a generation of kids who've been indoctrinated that humanities don't count. Mm-hmm. So why learn Italian? Because you can Google translate it, or everyone's learning English, or a picture is better than the Sistine Chapel. So I know I'm ranting on this, but my thing is that Marissa is in the front lines of our war for humanity.
Yeah,
for the beauty of humanity. That's the first. No, 100%. That's why you're
know
here.
That.
Because you're infantry.
It's a lot of responsibility.
You got kids paratrooping because you're going to get those kids will never be the same after one of your trips. I don't care what anybody says. Even the kid who's the most checked out is still going to be checked in, and you're going to get kids who are going to major in studies, like Italian, like literature, who are going to write books and read books and paint stuff. And have a more civilized cultured lifestyle because you planted that seed early. Because if we don't plant it in high school, when I get them in college, they're like, well, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares about history? Who cares about literature? Who's Dante and why would I care about the ninth level of hell? And who is Petrarch? And if we lose all that, what do we have at the end of the day?
I don't know. The phone.
Even like, I don't know. I know I'm living in a different world. I'm in Pat world. I know that, right? But I step into the reality, and I'm like, this stinks. I'm going back into my cage.
Yeah, I'm with
but
you.
But I think it's so important. You have to support the Marissas of this world. You have to. There are paratroopers. There are infantry. And how you support them is sending your kids to Italy. I know it's a sacrifice. It's not a good economy. But I think that it's a million times. You're going to blow so much money on college. It's going to give them the right foundation that they're going to appreciate education so much more. In general, I think we have to support them. We have to support Italian language in the schools, yep. Right? School districts are looking for every excuse not to have Italian in the schools. Their argument is like, what good is Italian? You know, Arabic and Chinese are more important because of population, and Italy has a small population, and people speak English, and that why care? School districts look for excuses to say, well, there's not enough Italian teachers out there. And, you know, a big argument I've made is that, you know, for people like Marissa, I've said that I think the majority of our Italian-American scholarships should be used to support teachers of Italian language. Because if you want to go for a PhD, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So you're going to go for a PhD to get a public school teacher's salary. That's insanity.
Yeah.
So if we have Italian teachers who want to go for a master's, you know, Eric went for a master's in Columbia. That was not cheap. Our friend, no. Right? I from IFL. If we want Italian-American teachers, because they need as much support as they can to influence these kids in high school, we should be backing up scholarships for them to get master's and PhDs. All our Italian teachers, if they want to become a doctor of the Italian language, Italian literature, Italian studies, they should know that there will not be any economic impediment to that.
I wish we had that. I had that conversation with Anthony Tambori the other day because, you know, a lot of organizations, I was the head of one of them for 6 years. You know, they've got millions of dollars in scholarship funds, but not enough of it is directed towards these kind of things, right? And that's something we have to get better at. Do you know of any resources out there, Marissa, that you know, people in the audience might be able to turn to if they're interested in studying this kind of stuff?
I definitely think you need to join professional organizations because sometimes we give out money. Like, there's so many Italian-American organizations that have the funding and give things out. They give out scholarships, they give grants, and people aren't applying for them because they're not, you know, dialed in. So I think, you know, joining these professional organizations, joining your community organizations, that's where you're going to get, you know, the communications about it. And you can see what kind of opportunities are there. They're there.
Yeah.
They're maybe not as expansive as we want, or maybe, you know, we want to have more of them, more funding, et cetera, but they do exist already.
Yeah. And I think ultimately we need to be able to provide like almost an aggregator of these kind of things for people because, like you say, they don't know what's out there. And we don't know what's out there. We don't know what kind of scholarship Unico gives versus NIAF versus OSDIA and all these ISDA and all these other organizations, let alone local groups or professional groups like the Teachers of Italian. So there is a lot out there. And I always have people ask me, you know, what can I do? My kid needs a scholarship. But, you know, it takes a lot of digging, and there's a lot of layers of the onion, and maybe that's part of our responsibility as the evangelizers here. To, you know,
it's really a seamless garment in the sense that we bring on authors constantly, right? So what are we saying? We're saying you have Italian-American academics who are doing academic work or writers, and it only works if you buy their books.
Right.
So if you listen and you're not supporting them buying their books, they are not going to economically be able to do what they're doing. So we say all the time, go out, buy 10 books. You shouldn't buy one. If you believe in this, buy 10 books, and that's what everybody's getting this Christmas. And I think the same goes with Italian teachers. Cut a check. You know, Seton Hall, my alma mater, has an Alberto Studies chair. If you go to a school like that has an Italian program, cut a check for $25 at Christmas. Because maybe you can't give a lot of money. That's fine. But you're showing you support this. You're saying to the university, wherever you went, I want my money to go to the Italian studies program or the Italian language program. And I think that alumni offices look at that.
Yeah.
And they say, well, you know, what are my alumni interested in? And I think that, you know, if your school board is trying to can Italian, even if you have no kids or no kids in the system, or your kids went to a private or parochial school, you got to get yourself into that meeting and say, I think that's important. Everybody has a job to do that. Marissa needs someone to feed her the ammo to support her because these Italian teachers are up against a lot of challenges now. It's not the hot, sexy language that I think it was in the 90s as far as with school boards. Am I correct to say that?
Well, I was in school in the 90s, so I'm not sure on the administrative level, but probably, yes, you're probably right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, numbers, you know, being what they are, everything we struggled with the AP exam all those years ago. And, you know, it's.
I mean, the AP exam, I mean, that's a whole other episode.
That's a whole other episode, but, sure.
Well, can I just say something actually on that note about the APs? I just spoke to not the Italian teacher in my school, but the AP French teacher in my school who had a former student from who graduated last year who went to, I believe, UPenn or one of the Ivies. She wrote to her French teacher and said, they only accept world language AP credits here because those exams, those world language AP exams are completely skill-based. It's not, you don't necessarily need to know about Dante, mm-hmm. for example. You need to be able to speak and write, interpret, communicate, and that's it. So it's really a very good gauge of what your
credit.
Knowledge is.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, that was like a huge testament to the program. And how do you do that? You don't just take AP 1 year. Like you need to build up to that point. It's, you need cultural knowledge. You need cultural understanding. You need the skills that you're learning at level one to communicate in order to get to that level. So it's all cumulative. And I think a really, really great testament to the AP programs.
The value, yeah.
The value of it, yeah.
And I mean that not just in terms of value for the student, but value for the dollar, because you are essentially paying less for more in getting college credits, right? That's the hook. It's like donating to a charity and getting a tax write-off, right? That it's got that same, it's an ROI for people. So if you are out there and you're going to study or your kids are going to study and make decisions and Italian's available, keep in mind, if you get all your way through the AP and you, I don't know if you have to get a certain score. What's the score you have to get on an AP?
I think it depends on the school accepting the credits, but usually it's a 3 or above, which seems like, it's not an easy exam, believe me.
No, I'm sure
I taught
not.
AP for many years. I don't right now. I don't miss teaching it because it's a lot. It's a lot of responsibility to try, you know, you have to perform, obviously. But it's a difficult exam, but the rubric really where they evaluate you is in the favor of the student. It's really, you do not need to be perfect in it. You need to be proficient enough to communicate. So I think it really does work. It's not that it's easy, but it's attainable to get a 3 or above on an AP world language exam.
Yeah. And it's, I think, well worth the time and the effort. And, you know, something I think it's an outside stamp, and sometimes those don't matter as much as we think they do, but there's a lot of value to this. And if you're not going to go all the way through the AP, take it at some point. You know, I grew up not speaking Italian, hearing Neapolitan, Sicilian, whatever versions and languages I was hearing through my extended family. But I took one or two semesters when I got to Fordham because the first time in my life was offered. And I made myself pretty proficient in it just through that and work. And because I was like waiting for it. So if it's available to you, just dip your toe in the water as an Italian American. I think it's a great opportunity to dive even deeper. If you know somebody out there who's not particularly in love with our culture or addicted to it like we are, encourage them, because you never know. It's such a deeper entrance point.
I cannot stress enough, from being in a college classroom, how important what Marissa and teachers like her are doing.
Yeah.
Because I cannot stress enough how the humanities have been put aside.
Yeah, but also going there with these kids, like living in
the language. Yeah, sure. But I'm saying
that's
like,
so important.
But the living, no one tells these kids. I couldn't believe it unless I saw it. No one on a high school, I find in a high school level, the voices of the humanities teachers are being drowned out by an overwhelming, we have to prepare kids for a technological world and math and science. And that's true. There's nothing wrong mm-hmm. about that. But also, AI is going to do a better job of it.
Mm-hmm.
So when do we stop being human, yeah. right? And I think that there's so, I just constantly hear from kids, why is history important? Mm-hmm. Why is literature important? Why should I be reading books, right? They're great at math and science. And I think that war, because at the essence, who we are is a people of humanity.
That's it,
right?
Yeah.
And we have to plant those seeds young. If you don't plant those seeds young, these kids are going to grow up devoid of culture. And I've seen it because I also think that kids pick up what's around them in the schools, right? That I don't care. Whatever you drill into them at home, it's where they are most of the day is in a school. And I think that you have to be vocal in encouraging the humanities, Italian programs, and paying, taking out the checkbook to send these kids to travel, to go to countries like Italy, because that's going to teach them the language. It's going to make it. If you can't convert your teenager to being into be Italian American after a trip to Italy, then I don't know what's going to do it.
Great point.
I mean, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, that's a great point. I remember people coming on Voyage Discovery and kind of telling me, like, they weren't really into it. They did it for their resume, whatever. And then they got there, and within 3 days, you know, you'd meet them halfway through or towards the end of their trip, and they were the greatest converts we had, right? The convert's always the greatest evangelist. So if your family, your friends, yourself, people you love are not as dedicated, this is a great way. The language,
the kids, it's all about the kids. Because we got it. We have to preserve. I mean, if we don't preserve it for the next generation, then what's the point?
I couldn't agree with you more.
You know, and that's why I think it's so important. Hey, listen, some of you are sitting on a lot of money, and you don't give to Italian American causes. You give to other causes when you have at the end of the year for tax purposes. Call up your local Italian high school and say, gee, I want a scholarship. You know, you got to dump some money.
Yeah,
you got to dump $10,000 because your accountant says you have to get rid of it. And the Italian program in your local high school, maybe there's a couple of kids who are very worthy to go on the trip, but the parents, maybe the family's on hard times, or they don't have the money for it. You want to make a difference? Sponsor two kids.
Yeah. Amen. I love that. I love that idea.
Sponsor the kids. Get out. Some of you have checkbooks that are covered in dust. You have your confirmation money wrapped up with rubber bands still under their mattress. There's no U-Hauls in funeral processions. Whoever you leave it to, they're going to blow it. The minute you close your eyes, that's just going to zoom out of their hands. You want to do some good. You need some money. Sponsor some kid. Call up Marissa. Do you have kids that could be sponsored?
Absolutely. I mean, because I'm a consultant for lots of different schools, right? So, and I get that question a lot from teachers, from families that are interested in, you know, sending their students, like, do we provide, you know, economic support? Mm-hmm. And there's definitely a need.
You have so many responsibilities then in this great struggle for us to spread the word and get these kids there. So if somebody does want to make a donation or does want to support some of these kids, they can contact you.
Yeah. So I have a website. I travel consulting business called Stellina Travel. So they can reach out to me at stellinatravel.com. Send me an email and we can get it going. I love this idea. It's a lot of responsibility, but I'm proud to do it. Obviously this is my passion. Mm. I just find that when you follow your passions, and similar to your experience, by the way, so just so kind of everybody knows in the audience, I also didn't grow up speaking Italian. I heard it always around me, the dialect, whatever, but I didn't start actually formally studying until college.
Wow.
So it ended up being my minor, but I just was taking it as the requirement, which is another thing. Like, sometimes students are like, I'll never become fluent. And I tell my students all the time, I was not born speaking Italian. I heard it. Maybe it was accelerated because
And both your parents were born in Italy.
My father was born there, went to school there, didn't come here until he was 18. My mom was born here, went back to Italy for a little while, and then they ultimately settled here in New Jersey. So yeah, my mom went to school here, but yeah, I heard it all around me, swirling around me, but I was always answering in English because people were bilingual or somebody would be translating for me. So I went to college not being able to speak, and it kind of was a big regret for me because I had all these family members that I was never able to speak with directly. Unfortunately, my grandmother passed when I was a senior. My paternal grandmother passed when I was a senior in high school. Never had a direct conversation with her.
Wow.
So I was like, you know what? I want to learn Italian. Went to the College of New Jersey, studied with, shout out to Simona Wright, one of the main influences in my career, because she just sparked something in me that I try to now transmit to my own students. There's just, it's the passion for it. So it's possible to do. Even if you are not, I think that's kind of a hesitation for a lot of people because it's like, well, I'll never be at that point. And you can. I think it's 95% is motivation.
Yeah.
Like, how much do you want to learn it? How much will you, and this is another point that I always try to make with my students. It can't just be, you know, 1 hour a day in the classroom. You have to try to immerse yourself in it. You have to listen to Italian music. You have to watch Italian movies. Go on Netflix and watch the shows in the language. Put the subtitles on, but listen to it. Immerse yourself in it. Read. Talk to people. Find the nonna in the back kitchen in your local pizzeria and go talk to her. Like, these are the kinds of things that you have to do if you want to, A, learn it, and B, continue with it, because those are the things that are going to carry you through.
It's like you're taking them to Italy. You have to make it a part of your living life. And you know, I love when you can chart the inspiration and the mentor and the figure that kind of sparked you. And I'm quite confident after being around you for an hour that you're giving that same spark and passing it along
to a lot of kids
because your passion's infectious. So Stellina Travel.
Stellina means little star, which is another little symbol there. Follow the star.
That's right. And the Star of Italy, that's one of the oldest symbols of Italy, is the star. And Pastina, of course, is a little star. So yeah, that to me is that's a great triumvirate of symbology to follow the star to Stellina Travel. If you are an individual, a teacher, parent, or an organization head.
I do adult groups too.
Oh,
heritage
wow.
tours. So anybody who'd want to do that. We do specific regions, so if you want to like dive deeper into your heritage region.
That'll be the whole other episode, because yeah. that's something that we are big advocates for. So,
for sure.
StellinaTravel.com. Marissa, thank you for being here.
It's been a real pleasure.
Hope everybody else out there enjoys this, appreciates, encourages the Italian language in the young people in our community and in your life. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
And your life will be great. See that you're born in Italian.
Da, 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 da.
You want your life
da,
to be
da,
great.
Da, 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 da,
see that you're born da, da, in Italiano and your life will be great. See that you're born in Italian.